This is Crossroads, the Get Religion podcast.
I'll tell you what sold me, and therefore my parents, on the college I attended as an undergraduate. Went up there, I remember like it was yesterday, went up there in the middle of October. It was Nebraska there, it doesn't sound very romantic, but looking out the windows of one of the dorms that we were touring, I saw beautiful, well, at the time I thought corn-fed Nebraska girls rolling in the autumn leaves, and from that moment on, I was going to that school. That's what sold me. Tells you a little bit about the younger Todd Wilken. But nowadays, there is the sales pitch being made on campuses and through mailing to parents and kids. How does a Christian parent know where they're sending their kid, really sending their kid, when they send them off to the university or to the college? Greetings and welcome to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly. I'm Todd Wilken. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
So a Christian parent has heard some of the, and some of these are really, frankly, horror stories coming off college and university campuses this year, and they say to themselves, you know, I don't think we have to worry because we sent our kid off to a Christian college or university. What would you say to that parent?
Well, there's a lot of things I could say, and it's based on my experience teaching in Christian colleges and universities for two decades now, basically, a little bit more than that. The main thing I would say is that almost every Christian college that I'm aware of, they're really, really good at something. So I want to start off by saying a positive note, which is that parents need to do a good job of investigating what schools have the most to offer for what their particular child is interested in studying, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, if you start off from a kind of a investigative stance on positive things, I think you're also prepared then to look into what the reputation or the reality of a school might be in terms of negative things. Also, don't forget that a school that what's negative news for one set of parents might be positive to another. We're going to kind of presume today that we're talking, most of the controversies involve schools that are more liberal than sort of their brand, and that leads us into controversies even in the world of religious colleges. But at the same time, there are a lot of parents who, frankly, are looking for progressive schools of different kinds, or maybe they have certain causes that they believe strongly in. So this works for parents on the left as well as on the right. You've got to know what you're getting into. The question is, how do you find out? And then since Get Religion is a journalism site and we're talking about journalism, I think people need to realize that in an age when what for many of us, especially strong defenders of the First Amendment, what for many of us would be crazy things that are happening on a lot of secular or liberal private university campuses, we need to understand that very quietly there are news stories in the most conservative of campuses, let alone moderate Christian campuses, as these schools bump in to the changing realities of our culture around them and the legal environment around them. So what I would say to parents is you have to do your homework. You have to sit down and think intelligently about what your values are and what the crucial issues are for your family, and then you're going to have to need to do some information searching. You're going to have to get online. You're going to have to dig past the public relations material sent to you by the enrollment department, and you're going to need to do some homework. So I don't want to go all the way negative and just simply say buyer beware, but I would even assume that parents today who are alumni, that they can't even look at their own alma maters and say, I'm absolutely sure what that school is like today. I'm not sure if my own alma mater is the best fit for myself as a parent, for my children, and for the values of our home. So I'm being here very specific in saying that both parents on the left and right have got work to do to figure out how to make this choice.
So talk about, I think you said, schools that are less conservative than their brand. Is that how you put it?
Yeah. I think it's important to know. Well, let me describe the process as I've kind of seen it. Mattingly's law is that every faculty member at every Christian college in America is probably to the political and cultural left of whoever donated the money to help pay their salary. That's just a basic kind of, I hope that's funny. It's kind of funny, not funny ha-ha, but funny quiet. I mean, the dynamic is that educators, as a rule, tend to be more complex and nuanced when it comes to political, social issues, moral issues, religious issues, than ordinary people in pews back at their churches. A very interesting Catholic educator, author of a very famous book on this topic, told me something off the record, so I'm not going to mention the name or the book or whatever. But in a conversation one time that I was not able to use in a column because it was off the record, he simply said, and I repeat this because I've heard this sort of thing echoed in interviews with other people, said, you know, there's really only two issues in Christian higher education today. The first issue, and this was repeated by the man I interviewed for my column this week for the Universal Syndicate, Anthony Esselin, who I believe has been a guest on your show.
He has.
In the past. This is my first conversation with him. He said, number one, you wish this wasn't the issue, but number one, you simply have to ask, does this school openly and unapologetically reject the sexual revolution? Is it going to come right out and say that we believe that most of what's been going on in our culture in terms of sexuality and sexual expression post-Beatles, you know, post the 60s, post Roe v. Wade for sure, we believe that most of it is mistaken. And at our college, we intend to winsomely and gracefully offer apologetics for traditional Christian doctrines on sexuality, gender, and marriage. Now, when you stop and think of all of the ways that that one topic intersects with life on college campuses today, we could sit here for the next hour and try to list them. But suffice it to say, a very important place that it intersects campus life is dormitories. You know, and basic policies on a campus about what's right, what's wrong, what will be encouraged, what will be discouraged, and what even in some cases will, in imperfect ways, the school will even attempt to forbid or even punish. This is called in loco parentis, except frankly, in the day and age we live in, I think a lot of parents wish the colleges would be more conservative than the parents themselves actually were, either in their own lives or in what they have advocated at their homes. The second issue that I've heard about over and over, and it was the wording that I thought was so fascinating. This author said, you need to ask if the highest goal, the strongest goal of the faculty of the college is to help the student escape the narrow worldview of their homes and their home churches. Now let me repeat that while that sinks in for a second. Is the primary goal of the faculty as educators to help students escape or outgrow or become more mature than the narrow religious point of view presumed to be in their homes or in their home churches? Now, this professor stressed that he's not asking faculty to stop discussing controversial issues. I know a lot of faculty, in my experience, who get their students extremely riled up by questioning values related to materialism, you know, and money and the shopping mall and the values of popular culture. I once got strong protest from students at Milligan College after a sermon I delivered in chapel in which I criticized the basic worldview of the movie Titanic. And students thought I was attacking them because I attacked an element of a movie they loved. You can rile students up a lot of different ways. The point this particular writer and others I've interviewed were making is that what is the primary goal of the school? Is the primary goal the teaching of classic literature, a classical approach to arts and letters? Is the primary goal to teach students a particular either denominational or classically Christian worldview, a lens through which they view the world? Or is the primary job to convince students that they have been raised in some sort of narrow, limiting religious point of view, and that to be truly mature and truly Christian, they need to escape from that? An Orthodox priest friend of mine years ago expressed this in a really interesting way. I asked him where his own children were going to go to college, and he said he had made the decision for his children to go to state schools, for the most part, instead of Christian schools. And I asked him why, and he said, well, frankly, I would rather them get liberalism straight than go to a Christian school and be served up a kind of Christian evangelical light version of liberalism, which might be a lot less obvious. And besides, he thought the single most important element of college from a moral perspective for his children was not the college they were at, but where they lived. And in this particular case, the child we were talking about, this priest was a part of an effort by several Orthodox families for them to have their children live together in a home. I believe it was with another Orthodox priest with his wife and children, lived in a home off campus and kind of lived in an Orthodox Christian community that supported each other. They began and ended their days with morning and evening prayer. The priest there served as their father confessor. In other words, they lived in a religious environment and then went out into the world from that kind of strong, affirming living arrangement. Now, I've offered a whole bunch of stuff there. What's your reaction to that? And let me ask, if these questions are ever discussed in the context of Missouri Synod Lutherans, their schools.
Yeah, I mean, my church body is rather famous for having an inordinately large educational system in the past at all levels, but today, especially at the higher education level, larger than probably the church body, the size of the church body might suggest. And these are the kind of things that are being discussed, especially that last point about whether or not what the kids are getting is kind of a light kind of liberalism with a veneer of Christianity spread thinly over it.
Yeah. I went to Baylor University. I think you've heard my wisecrack before that at one point when I was discussing events at Baylor with a leader in the administration, you know, I said my goal in life has always been to teach at a Christian school instead of a Baptist school. And what I meant by that was Baptists are so strong, and from their perspective this is proper, they're so strong on their concept of the priesthood of every believer, sola scriptura, sole competency, that it almost becomes bad for a school to have a religious worldview, let alone to advocate it. And I've always been interested in teaching in a school that kind of knows what it believes and wants to allow students to know that they're going to come there and see the world through that lens. Trust me, I'm more than confident that in the complex and all invasive media world that we live in, that you're not locking students up and keeping them away from the world. Nobody can do that. The Amish can't do that. What you're talking about here is whether your school is even going to attempt to debate from a particular point of view when it comes to the crucial issues facing the culture. I'll tell you another story that's very influential here when it came to kind of opening my eyes to how complex these situations are. My wife and I and our two children, when we first moved to Maryland, my daughter was attending, I don't think it'd hurt to mention the school, Annapolis Area Christian School, which is a fine school that we're very fond of. That's kind of in a Reformed tradition. And you would say, well, you know, why would the Orthodox go to that school? Well, it was a very strong Christian school. It told us very openly where they were. And other Orthodox parents had told us that their children had a fine experience at that school. Well, anyway, a couple of months after we got there, I volunteered to serve as a chaperone on a field trip that was out of state, up into Amish country, up in Pennsylvania. And we were riding back that night at the end of the day on the bus, and I was sitting at the front of the bus with a number of other parents and fell into a conversation with a woman that I quickly discovered was Roman Catholic, and that her, like, five or six children, if I remember correctly, were at this Reformed Christian school. And I thought this was fascinating and said, but you live in the Baltimore area. The Baltimore area is very strongly Catholic. Are you telling me that there were no Catholic school options that fit with your family? And she just laughed uproariously and said, oh, come on. You've got to understand that there are Catholic schools and there are Catholic schools. And then she made an amazing statement. She said, my children have been attacked, openly attacked, for their conservative Catholic faith way less at this conservative Protestant school than at any Catholic school that we've ever been a part of or visited. That in a Catholic context, as conservative Catholics, they were constantly being judged against a standard that was a kind of progressive and liberal Catholicism. Thus, their children were the bad guys. In a Protestant context, ironically, kind of an ecumenical one, the Catholic beliefs of this family were actually quite similar on moral and social issues to the school, and their children had had almost no difficulties at all as Catholics in that context. And my children had little or no problem there at all as Orthodox Christians in that context. So a lot of things that have to do with branding and labeling, you've just got to get beyond that. And if reporters will investigate into these conflicts within Christian education and inside denominational education, I think they'll discover that there are a lot of interesting debates and stories in this context. And if you have one of these schools sitting in your backyard, so to speak, you need to investigate that.
You had mentioned before that Anthony Esalen gives as the first rule of advice to determine to the best of your ability whether or not this college or university is willing to take an explicit stand against most, if not all, of the advances, so-called, of the sexual revolution. Unpack that a little bit, if you would.
Well, that leads us to a funny thing that he recommended. And I have to admit, I hadn't thought of this. I thought he was, when I asked him, what's your advice to Catholic parents? And for background here, after 27 years of teaching at Providence College, in a very bitter conflict last year, he was accused of all kinds of things by students, but essentially he was accused of being politically incorrect and opposing the sexual revolution, quite frankly. And he ended up leaving a school where he had tenure. And he faced strong opposition from faculty members as well as students. So he packed up and moved to a much smaller school, the Thomas More School up in New Hampshire. Well, I expected him to give all kinds of detailed kind of culture wars, faculty-related advice. And he did some of that. But the very first thing he talked about I thought was fascinating. He recommended that parents go to the website of the school and find the online calendar for campus life, for student life, and then look specifically at Friday night and Saturday night and find out if the campus was making any attempts to offer a kind of alternative social environment in terms of simply fun and wholesome things to do, or even dating environments, or they were just doing something constructive so that the weekend, as he put it, the weekend isn't just the weekend. And we all know what that means. He named, for example, a school in Kansas that some people pointed him to that calendar, and he looked at it, and almost every weekend there were activities going on involved to a very active campus group that was into swing dancing. And, you know, and that struck him as, you know, pretty fun. But at the same time, it struck him as probably not what's normally going on in Christian colleges in a lot of environments. He also, and I didn't have room to work this into my column, he also said that it's important to look and see if the college is offering young people, male and female, a chance to work together in serving the poor, in serving the less advantaged, in helping provide maybe even academic or educational help to people in the community surrounding the campus. Because another way you find out, besides swing dancing or kind of alternative dating environments, one of the ways that young people find out what the values of other young people are, even potential people you're dating or potential mates, is what do they serve? What do they value? Where are they willing to put their time? And so he said this is probably just as important in a Catholic context as how many masses a school may be holding. He said, now, if you look on the website and you see lots of references to when confession is held, he said that may tell you that they have a very good chaplaincy office, but that may not tell you anything at all about the worldview of the English department or the classics or the theology department. At that point, you're going to have to probe a little bit deeper. Two practical things he mentioned that are in my column. He recommended that people simply dig into the academic resume section and find out, for example, how many people at a particular school are teaching subjects related to the highly politicized field of gender studies. That doesn't automatically tell you that what they're doing is good or bad, but it at least waves a flag that says, you know, this theology department has more people teaching gender studies than New Testament. Maybe I need to look into that. He also suggested that in the faculty resume and biography section, that you just simply read and see what kinds of books these people are publishing, what kind of papers they're publishing, what are the topics that they proudly investigate again and again and again. He said that will tell you more about the worldview of the college than anything you will ever read in a PR brochure from the enrollment office. Does that make sense?
I wanted to ask you about something because it seems to be a common denominator to one degree or another between some of these stories. Esalen's story of essentially being accused by certain students and then later by some more official part of the administration of all these various isms, racism and sexism,
Let's be blunt. I mean, let's get a load of this. Here's a phrase from a faculty letter. The faculty of his college wrote a letter accusing him of racist, xenophobic, misogynist, homophobic, and religiously chauvinistic statements.
I can't help but connect that, Terry, with the news that's been coming out of Evergreen State lately,
yeah,
where the students have essentially hijacked the campus, shut the place down. And I wonder whether this is something that parents ought to be concerned about, and that is how much control do the students exercise over the college itself?
Well, see, I don't think that's a very big issue at most Christian school. I mean, Evergreen is notoriously a kind of secular, standalone, state-funded school. And I think you're not surprised maybe when some of the more radicalized of state schools, you see these sort of things happening. Now, where you might see something like that in a Christian college, once again, is at the level of discipline and the policies that are in effect and enforced by resident advisors, RAs, as they're often called. Who's in charge of discipline inside dormitories? How does the system actually work? When students have complaints about things that are happening around them, do those complaints get heard? Is there a system where their concerns are taken seriously? That's a very practical question that parents need to ask on behalf of their children.
I think also of Middlebury College, which has a very tenuous relationship to its Congregationalist founding, I am certain, but one where there was additional student violence in this case against Charles Murray a couple months back. And in terms of discipline, as you mentioned, Terry, to call it a slap on the wrist is an overstatement.
Once again, though, don't forget that liberal private schools have the same right to advocate their political and theological points of views as conservative schools do. So I think that if you attend a liberal private school, you need to find out what its doctrines are, so to speak. You know, we had that case a couple of years ago at Vanderbilt where InterVarsity was thrown off campus because of their opposition to gender and sexuality policies on the campus. And an ordained Anglican priest, the woman who was the head of the InterVarsity chapter there, made a very interesting statement to me. And I think this describes what you're talking about in the world of kind of more liberal private schools. From her perspective, she made a point that Vanderbilt, which was historically Methodist, but has always stressed that it's now non-sectarian, that it's independent, that it has kind of a Methodist heritage that's a little bit somewhere in the DNA, but that it's basically a liberal mainstream private school. Her point was fascinating and I think deadly accurate. She said, you need to understand that Vanderbilt is once again a sectarian school. On issues of religious doctrine related to sexuality, Vanderbilt is now saying that there are absolute rights and wrongs, and that if a religious group on the Vanderbilt campus doesn't have the same approach to religious doctrine on sexuality as Vanderbilt, they will be tossed off campus. So in a strange sort of way, Vanderbilt now has a doctrinal covenant. Isn't that an interesting way of wording it? So if parents are going to send their children to a liberal school like Vanderbilt, you need to ask just as many questions about First Amendment limitations, doctrinal limitations, lifestyle things. You need to ask just as many questions about what will be enforced there as if your child was going to Bob Jones or Liberty or some other notoriously, in the eyes of many, conservative Christian school. In this day and age, all private schools have their doctrines, and parents need to find out what they are.
Finally then, Terry, I guess what the average parent's going to be wondering here is, you know, I don't think that some of these schools that have a stronger tie to their religious roots are anxious to share publicly what may really be happening on campus with student groups and things like that, because they know that those who pay the bills, the parents and the alumni, are going to be further right than they are. How do I get past that smokescreen with about a minute?
Okay, well, first of all, once again, follow Anthony Esselin's recommendations about investigating online, about the interest, the research topics, and the specialties of faculty. I think the other thing you can do, if you're within a religious tradition, you can call churches within your religious tradition in the same zip code or the same general area of this school and ask the pastors what they have heard about what life is like on those campuses, And then find out maybe even if there is a campus fellowship within your denomination at that school, and that gives you another circle of people to ask about. I mean, my son went to a state school, but what he found was that it was a state school that wasn't pushing an agenda on students. And he had a positive experience in there, and his church remained the center of his life through the whole thing. So parents have to figure out what makes the most sense for their family and their values based on real information.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate at the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks for being here.
Glad to be here again.
I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you next week. Thanks for listening to Crossroads with Terry Mattingly.
Crossroads is a joint production of GetReligion.org and Issues Etc.